Have you looked for an apartment and been turned down for no good reason? Have you spoken to someone over the phone? They said that everything was good, you could come see the place? You get there and then suddenly it's been rented? Was it because of your race? Religion? Disability? You buy the newspaper just to look in the apartment section. Did you notice the no children in the ad? How about no Section 8? If you feel you've been discriminated against, please call the Mass Fair Housing Center at 1-800-675-7309. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law.
Turn the heat up. Pick the legal speed up. Bring discriminatory landlords to justice. Predatory lenders are screaming, what's this?
Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3, Northampton.
And also streaming online at valleyfreeradio.org. This is Out There. I'm your host, Ruth Ewerdring. Today is January 7th. Yesterday was Epiphany, also known as Three Kings Day, a big holiday in the Christian tradition, well, the Christian Latino or Hispanic tradition especially. The main feature of today's show will be an interview with Miriam Fuentes, who lives in Northampton, and she's the director of several films, including Puerto Rico, 500 Años, Puerto Rico, 500 Years, and Don Pepe Ferrar Canales. She talks a bit about the Three Kings Day and what that means in Puerto Rican culture and in cultures around the world. And I'll get to that interview later. But first, I have a little clip. All these interviews and clips are from within the last couple days. So first, I have a little conversation with my housemate, Alex. This is weather-related because it's really cold outside. Alex, it's early January, and the thermometer says 16 degrees outside, and you're hanging up laundry. Why don't you just use a dryer?
Well, we don't have a dryer.
So are you hanging laundry inside or outside?
I'm hanging laundry inside on this collapsible rack so that if the weather, right now it's snowing a little bit, but once the weather changes, then I'll bring this outside.
How will it dry when it's so cold outside?
The miracle of sublimation, where water goes directly from being a solid, ice, to being a gas. It's not ever a liquid.
So why don't you just leave it inside on the drying rack?
You have to think about the moisture of your house. You don't want your house to be too wet because that water goes somewhere and that water goes into the walls and can cause mold issues. I'm not that familiar. You should ask some other people about details on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can do some clothes drying inside. Depends, you know, all that moisture goes into the air, which can be a good thing if it's really dry.
But we have plenty enough moisture in our house already.
I think so.
So can you fit all the clothes you need on this collapsible drying rack? Or what about sheets and stuff?
No, they won't work. You definitely need to do those outside. If it's windy, you're going to get much faster drying times. If it's sunny, you're going to get much faster drying time.
Any tips for hanging clothes outside on a line when it's this cold outside?
It's helpful if the clothes are warm so that your hands don't freeze. But also I wear very thin gloves that still allow me to manipulate the clothespins and such.
What did people in cold climates do before the invention of the clothes dryer during winter?
Well, this drying rack is called a clothes dryer, Ruthie. it's just not an electric or gas-powered clothes dryer.
It's a solar clothes dryer.
Yes, it's a solar clothes dryer. I mean, I don't know, but if I were to take a guess, I would say that they used either wood heat or they used solar heat to dry their clothes.
You just know what works for you.
Yeah.
Is clothes drying like a chore, or how do you make time for it in today's busy world?
Oh, sometimes it feels like a chore, but it's also, it just feels like a really nice meditative thing to do, to be outside or inside and just handle each of the items of clothing and kind of realize how much, like, think about especially in the past before washing machines, how, you know, each item of, well, I guess they did have washing machines that were hand-powered. But, you know, each item of clothing took a lot of time to wash and make sure it was clean. And doing the drawing. You get to handle each item and put that up. It can be really difficult. For a while, you know, we lived here with a baby and young person, and they have such tiny clothes, and they have a lot of them. And every item of clothing, you know, you have to put up with a little clothespin. And so I kind of wish there was a way, like in a dryer, you just throw it all in. I wish there was a way to be able to lay out all those tiny pieces of clothing.
Like a drying tray or basket or like a rack with edges.
Alex had one more suggestion for drying clothes outside in cold weather like this, which is make sure you don't put your laundry basket full of clothes outside and think you're going to come back to it, or else you'll have a frozen block. That was Alex Jarrett, my housemate. Alex knows a lot about a lot of things. He also knows about how to put my radio show archived online. So if anyone wants to hear past shows, they can go to weatherbeard.com/Ruthie, R-U-T-H-Y. So next we have the interview with Miriam Fuentes. I think this interview is about 20 minutes long. I kind of forget, but here we go.
Today is the 5th, and tomorrow is...
Oh, this interview is done Monday.
Celebration in Puerto Rico, which is called the Date of the Three Saint Kings.
Uh-huh.
We shorten it to Three Kings or Three Magi, uh-huh. El Día de los Tres Santos Reyes, uh-huh. Or Los Tres Reyes Magos. So I thought that this would interest you to know more about these festivities that originates in the Christian, in the early Christian world. And from there, they go to Spain, and from Spain to most of the Hispanic world. And it has taken root in Puerto Rico. It's one of the greatest celebrations. This is what they say, that the Christmas in Puerto Rico are the longest Christmas celebrations. Mm-hmm. Which is 12 days after the nativity. Uh-huh. But we also have, after that, we have the Fiesta de San Sebastián, which is a great saint in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And that is on the 15th, uh-huh. from the 15th to the 20th. So we have our Christmas goes from the date of Acción de Gracias, or Thanksgiving, uh-huh. till mid-January. So uh-huh. we have a okay. very long Christmas. But the Three Kings is one of the most important celebrations on the island right now, and mm-hmm. it's being celebrated tomorrow. Well, there's a few things that I can say about the Three Kings, and the tradition originates in the Gospel of Matthew. He's the only apostle that mentions the visit mm-hmm. of the Three Kings mm-hmm. to the Holy Family. And he doesn't mention their names or that they were kings. He only says that they were magi. They mm. were magicians. Of course, you know that the word magician comes from the early Persian, Medo-Persian language. And it goes from there to the Greek, to the Latin, and then to the Spanish and all Romance languages. Their number, whether they were kings or not, could have been drawn from the fact that they, according to the gospel, they brought three presents to baby Jesus. And these were gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Also to the idea that they represented the kingdoms that were known at the time on the three continents, Asia, Europe, and Africa. So as a matter of fact, the three kings are very ethnically integrated, because one of them is very dark, mm-hmm. or the black king. One is very fair-skinned, and the other one is more like the people in Spain, in the south of Spain, which mm-hmm. are like a mixture of Arabs and Christians that were living at the time of the Moors in Spain. I was brought up as a Catholic. From my upbringing, what I know is that these were presents that were given to baby Jesus because he was a king, and these were the kind of presents that were given to mm-hmm. royalty. To me, it's very interesting that the three kings are revered by the three original Christian denominations, the Catholic, the Orthodox, and the early or ancient Eastern Christian churches in Syria and the Levant. These are very important saints in those, you know, those traditions. And the festivity that is also known as the Epiphany is also called the Feast of Adoration. You know, so we have very different names for it. We have the Three Kings Days, we have the Three Magicians, we have the Feast of Adoration, and we have the Epiphany. Mm-hmm. So that gives you an idea of how important this festivity, this celebration is in the most of the Christian world. Mm-hmm. They were called Gaspar, Melchor, and Baltasar, and supposedly their names are supposed to represent various ethnicities. As Baltasar is the dark skinned king, and he is revered by the descendants of slaves in America. Depending on the country, they can arrive on horses, on camels, or elephants. Again, that gives you an idea of the wide geography of the tradition. Mm-hmm. I've seen description of the three kings, mm-hmm, even in China and in India. Also in the Hispanic world, the three kings, or the three magi, are part of the nativity scene. It's a tradition also in Hispanic homes. You can have a Christmas tree, but you also have a pesebre, or nativity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In Puerto Rico, they put the three kings in there, even though they came a couple of years later after the birth of Jesus?
Even if they...
And they do it in this country, too.
And it's, of course. If they came a couple of years after Jesus was born, it wasn't, they didn't come to him anger. It's interesting that at the time of the colonization, of the Spanish colonization, especially in the Antilles, in Cuba, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, Mexico, and Uruguay, the Epiphany was a day off for the slaves. In the early days of Christianity, they didn't celebrate Christmas Day. As we said, this was a pagan day that was incorporated later on in the church. The original festivity was the Epiphany. They took to the streets to dance with their, to the music of their drums, and they would particularly revere Baltasar, the King Baltasar, which was the dark-skinned one. Mm-hmm. And this is the origin of the Pascua Negra, Black Easter. That is so much celebrated in South America, especially in Paraguay, where there is a big Afro-American community. In Spain also, and in some Hispanic countries, children write letters the day before asking for presents to the kings. Mm-hmm. And these presents would be delivered during the early days of the 6th. We would prepare boxes with grass and water, and dishes with water, and we would leave them under the tree or under our beds. And in the morning, when we woke up, we would find our presents under the bed or under the trees, and no grass or water, because supposedly the camels or the horses would have eaten the grass and drinking the water. It's very magic for the children. There's also another tradition related to that, which is the Three Kings Cavalcade. This is another related tradition that's celebrated in Spain and other Hispanic countries on the day before Reyes, or the Three King Days. Mm-hmm. And in this, on this occasion, men that are, they dress as the three magi and ride with gifts that will be given the next day to the children of the community. Mm-hmm. And in Puerto Rico, this tradition has also taken deep roots, particularly in the southern town of Juana Díaz. Mm-hmm. The cavalcade departs from Juana Díaz days before the January the 6th, and it rides throughout the island to visit the towns along its route, finally reaching San Juan on the 6th, where many children are awaiting the three kings to receive the presents that the kings will distribute. And at the same time, their parents and other adults will join in the big public festivities. Mm-hmm. Another tradition that is a very strong tradition is called the Vigil of Reyes, or the Promise to the Reyes. It's a promise that people make if they have asked for the mediation of, remember, this, the kings are saints, so they can mediate whenever you have a need or a special request. And if you're favored, you're supposed to keep a promise that you gave them. And the promise is usually that you would celebrate a big feast, a big party for the neighbors and your friends, They would come and eat, and you would offer all kinds of delicacies and music. Mm-hmm. And they would join in from the night before, be partying throughout the night until the morning. Well, mm-hmm. they would be offer breakfast before they leave. So it's mm-hmm. a big, big, big thing. A lot of people mm-hmm. do that every mm-hmm. year. And it's mostly in the small towns, in the mountain towns, because people, Puerto Ricans like to go to the countryside on the festivities because it's like more traditional. It's also very interesting that the Los Reyes has left a very strong impact or impression on Western art. Mm-hmm. And this is because the adoration was represented as early as in the Roman catacombs. We have a Puerto Rican who has been living in the valley, in Amherst specifically, for most of his life. Mm-hmm. And he's a wood carver, mm-hmm. and he has mm-hmm. beautiful...
Who is that?
That's Carlos Santiago. Mm-hmm. He's lived here, I think, like for the last 40 years, most of his life, actually. Maybe a little less than that, but he settled here with his family. His night, and he's a teacher as well. Mm-hmm. And has been teaching people, young, especially young kids in the valley.
That might be a good segue into, I wonder if you could say anything.
Actually, that's a good segue into this song. I'll come back to the interview in a minute. This is Trio Vega Pajeño, Los Tres Reyes Magos.
Los magos que llegaron a Belén, anunciando la llegada del Mesías, a Jesús con alegría le cantamos hoy también. De tierra lejana venimos a verte, nos sirve de guía la estrella de oriente. De tierra lejana venimos a verte, nos sirve de guía a la estrella de oriente. Oh, brillante estrella que anuncia la aurora, no me falte nunca tu luz bienhechora. Oh, brillante estrella que anuncia la aurora, no me falte nunca tu luz bienhechora.
With Los Tres Reyes Magos. I'm going to continue with the interview with Miriam later, but right now I have a short like a 5-minute clip with this guy, Carlos, who I ran into on the street after talking with Miriam. And he told a little bit more about his personal experience with the Three Kings holidays. Tell me something you like about being Puerto Rican.
It's a lot of stuff that I like to be in Puerto Rico. I miss the parties and all the stuff. We make a lot of parties. We call parrandas, we go house to house and with different instruments. To be in Puerto Rico in this time period is very nice. We've been all the time in family, making porks and different stuff. It's the whole pork, and they put in the stick, and then with charcoal and all the stuff burning, you turn the pork. And many places that you can go in Puerto Rico that is, they made it. But the good thing is when you have family and you make that thing in your family member house, that is very fun because it's in family. It's not in this place they sell the pork.
It's not like going out to a restaurant.
No, it's not like this. It's like you go to your mom's house and you found cousin girls and a lot of different persons that is very close to the family. And I miss all that stuff. The chon asado is a roasted pork, and it's very good.
Do you have family in Puerto Rico that you go back to visit, or are you here?
For now, I'm stuck here because I need to do a lot of medical things. But sometimes I visit my daughters in Puerto Rico in the summer. But in the winter, I don't like there in the winter because it's still very hot. Here it is. I prefer the cold weather.
Then you don't mind that I'm standing in your sunshine? I'm trying to block the wind, but I'm blocking the sun, too.
No, don't worry.
Okay. So there's many different people that come out of Puerto Rico, as many different people come out of any place. But are there things, like particularly here in the Valley, that you think unite Puerto Ricans in some way?
Well, in my case, I don't have a lot of friends. You know, I have a lot of family from Puerto Rico in Springfield. But the thing is, because I don't drink anymore, they have a lot of stuff that is like a temptation to drink again. Uh-huh. And I don't want to do it again. So it's a little hard. For now, I just been three years without alcohol. Uh-huh. And if I go there, I know that one of them going to convince me to drink something. Because we are Puerto Ricans, so this isn't our culture. I try to stay away for all that stuff. But, you know, I miss them because I know that they celebrate a lot of things like this. Three Kings, Christmas, we call the Octavitas. That is practically like 8 days before the Three Kings that we still celebrating. Uh-huh. That is like 8 extra day. So we make different stuff and parrandas, that is with guitars and a lot of different instruments that we sing songs and in the middle of the night you go to this friend house and you start to play music without any notice. Like a surprise and nobody knows that you're gonna be there, you know? And it's very fun to wake up the friends or family and say like hey, surprise, and we start to play music and the people come inside of the house and they make soup or something like that and we share with the people, with different people, in the Christmas or maybe in the Three Kings.
Uh-huh. Do you think that happens here, like in Holyoke or Springfield, or is that just in Puerto Rico?
Maybe happened in Holyoke and Springfield, but not like in Puerto Rico, not the same, you know. Uh-huh. That is they go with different instruments in the front of the house and they start to play after midnight because it's against the law here. Uh-huh. But in Puerto Rico, in this type of days, that is very common to hear the place that you live. A lot of people singing songs in the middle of the night.
But so you just, like, a few of you, you'll get together with friends and just pick someone's house to, like, to surprise and just to have a party.
Yeah, just a bunch of people driving, and then they have a guitar, they have panderos, and it's like drums, but hand drums. So we call that thing like a asalto, and then start to sing and play very loud and all that stuff, so the people need to awake. We obligate the people awake, and you know, they need to be prepared, because most of the time the people that is not prepared, they don't have nothing. They don't have rum, they don't have beers or something like that. Uh-huh. But if you are prepared, you have beer, you have rum, you have a lot of food in the fridge that you can put in the stove and make the sopon, that is like a soup. Uh-huh. With different kind of stuff, and they made it, and then 3-4 o'clock in the morning you uh-huh. left the house.
That was Carlos, who I ran into on the street in Northampton, talking about the Puerto Rican celebration of Three Kings Day, or the Epiphany, which was yesterday. This is Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP, Northampton, 103.3 FM. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Out There airs every Wednesday from 4 to 5. I'm going to continue with the interview with Miriam Fuentes in a little bit. But here, I'm going to play this show promo.
Alternatively Speaking with Dr. Saskia Cote, a weekly wellness program every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on WXOJLP Northampton, 103.3 FM, or streaming worldwide, valleyfreeradio.org. We have weekly meditations, informative guests, wellness book discussions, and more. Listen every Wednesday, 6 to 7.
All right, so I'm going to go back to the interview with Miriam Fuentes.
About common patterns of movement for people, for Puerto Ricans coming to the Valley or coming to Springfield, Holyoke, Northampton. Maybe, how did you get here?
I lived here before.
Where did you grow up?
No, I grew up in San Juan, Puerto uh-huh. Rico. And I was living in New York for a while with my two kids. And I decided to come to here, to Amherst, because I wanted to go to UMass. I stayed here for a while. I already had a master's degree in economics, but I wanted to do something different. Mm-hmm. But my father died, and then in Puerto Rico, and then we had a difficult family situation with my mother, so I went back. Mm-hmm. But I've been coming, visiting my friends here. Jeanette, who, as a man, incidentally, she was my neighbor in New York, and we moved together to Amherst. Yeah. I went back to Puerto Rico, but she stayed. She made this her home. Mm-hmm. During the last 3 years, I've been going back and forth. I've always liked this area, plus I feel that there's a lot to be done with the Puerto Rican community here, and also because I have, like, a vision that we can build bridges. This is an area to build bridges because it has such a big Puerto Rican and Hispanic community. And because Puerto Rico is kind of a bridge between different cultures, not only American and Latin American, but also European and Korean and African. We have had so many inputs. Because it's a small island and it's been colonized by different powers along its history, that we have received so many influences and we've been able to mix them. Mm-hmm. And I feel that we, in that sense, that we are in a good position to build bridges between different ethnicities and communities and to be kind of a showcase of how different cultures can mingle and not only coexist, but also mingle and become, out of many influences, a singular mm-hmm. culture, mm-hmm. a unique culture. So this is why I came here, because I felt that there is a big opportunity here in terms of that. You'd be amazed. I helped writing a book on the cuatro, the musical and the string, the string instrument, which is Puerto Rican. But it so happens that the project, the Puerto Rican Cuatro project, was born here in Northampton. Huh. The project to write this book and to do research on the instrument. There was very little research on the island, on the instrument, on the roots and the development. And there was a lot of confusion, I would say 20 years ago. And a person here who is a luthier, a Puerto Rican luthier, who is William Compiano, and Juan Sotomayor became together and founded the Puerto Rican Cuatro Project with the idea to do research on the instrument. I was incorporated to the project, and we wrote together. Together we wrote a book, the first book that was written on the Puerto Rico Cuatro, but also on other native string instruments.
The name of the book is?
It's only in Spanish. It's Nuestros Cuerdas Nativas. It's the only book on the history and development of the cuatro and other Puerto Rican string instruments like the vihuela, tiple, bordonúa. It took like 20 years of research to write the book.
When did it get published?
Just last year.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah. So that gives you an idea of how connected we are. This is a book on Puerto Rico, which was very important for the people in Puerto Rico, but it originated here. Uh-huh. I was living in Puerto Rico. I was mostly what I did was the writing, and I also did some of the historic research. But it originated here in Northampton. And Puerto Rico Cuatro Project, if you look it up in Google, has a huge website with information and pictures.
So my understanding is that Puerto Rico is considered a territory of the United States, which is basically like a colony, right? You don't have representation. What kind of legal representation do Puerto Ricans have? And can Puerto Ricans, they can freely travel anywhere in the country, in the United States and the U.S. territories, right?
Right, because we American-born citizens.
Right.
But we don't have any kind of real representation in Congress, or we don't vote for the president of the United States. So in that sense, you can say that we have no representation, because we are not represented in the federal government except by a resident commissioner, which has voice. He can speak, but he has no vote. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't vote, so his opinion is really... He's more like a lobbyist than anything else for Puerto Rico. Yeah, it's legally a territory, because in terms of the U.S. Constitution, there's no such thing as colony. Mm-hmm. The Constitution only mentions territories and possessions. So we are a territory in terms... This has been taken to the Supreme Court a few times. Our legal condition has been described or defined by the Supreme Court as an organized territory, which is kind of different from a possession, and it gives you certain rights in terms of who administers the territory. We have a local government, we elect our governor and the legislature, pretty much like any state, but that's it. We don't have, we have a federal court, like every state, but we don't have representation in the federal government, which is the difficult situation, because nowadays it's the federal government plays a big role in the lives of every American, you know.
Yeah.
Healthcare, security, all kinds of programs are decided at the federal level.
Why do you think there's such resistance to giving Puerto Rico federal representation?
Oh, that's complicated. For one thing, there is a sector in Puerto Rico which has been the traditional, I don't want to say ruling class, but it's sort of a ruling class that resists the incorporation of Puerto Rico because they have certain privileges. The status quo grants them certain privileges. One of the privileges is that the island... It's a safe haven. It's like a tax haven. And many people in the so-called traditional ruling class are like middle persons to big capital, and they enjoy certain privileges, and they have a piece of the pie. So these people are mostly resistant to that. I think that's always also a sector. No, I don't think it's. There is a sector that fears that with incorporation or statehood, we will lose our culture and our own personality, cultural personality or national personality. I don't think that is the case, because the United States itself is becoming more and more Hispanic. And the influence of the Latinos or Hispanics here are, it's something that is going to stay. It's not going away anytime soon. And especially you can see that in states like in Florida. With the influence of the Cuban people who migrated there, but even more now with the Puerto Ricans that have moved there, there's almost, I think there's already 1 million Puerto Ricans living in Florida. And they all retain their culture. As a matter of fact, one of the examples of that is the Puerto Rican Culture Project, which was born here from a person, from two people who were, one of them was born and raised here. The other one was born in Puerto Rico, Cumpiano. Juan Sotomayor was born in New York, and he was raised in New York. William Cumpiano was born in Puerto Rico, but he came from a Puerto Rican father and a Jewish American woman, and he came to New York to study when he was a college student. He stayed here for the rest of his life. He's lived here forever. But he still had this need, emotional need, for his culture, and this longing to discover his roots. And this is how the Cuatro Project was born. Another example of that is the Cuatro itself and the Jíbaro music. The Jíbaro music and the Cuatro music were preserved in New York within the Puerto Rican community.
What's the Jíbaro mean?
Jíbaro means, it's a name given for the person, for the country person, for the, it's like a Puerto Rican hillbilly.
Okay.
Yes. Originally it meant the Puerto Rican hillbilly, now it has became a name for Puerto Ricans. So you would say, I'm a Jíbaro.
Yeah.
You know, like you would say, I'm a Boricua also, which is a name that came.
And where does that word come from?
Boricua like comes from the first, the name, the Taíno name for the island, which was Borinquen. So people of the island of Borinquen are Boricuas. And we're also Jíbaros, which is the name that was used to depict the country dweller. And I think that the Puerto Rican culture is very strong here, and it's being preserved, and it's going to be preserved. So I don't think there's anything to, there's no reason to worry about losing a culture, especially on the island. I think that's one of the two main considerations in terms of Puerto Rican becoming a state and having representation. Of course, there's also resistance within certain sectors here in the States, in the United States, that are precisely afraid of this multiculturalism that has sort of taken root during the last decades. So they're a little fearful of losing, of the United States losing its identity. So it's very curious because but the thing is, I don't think that is reason to deny a whole people the right of representation. And my point of view is that we either become integrated as a state and have full rights as citizens, or we go our own way as an independent country. That's the moral thing to do in terms of the United States. Either you grant us independence or... Thank you.
been listening to an interview with Miriam Fuentes, Northampton author, filmmaker, knowledgeable person. That music was from the Puerto Rican Cuatro, that stringed instrument. Miriam is also part of the Puerto Rican Cuatro project. This is Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. I'm going to play a little clip from George, who I ran into in the park the other morning. It was Sunday morning, early. It was still dark out, and it was pretty cold. It was a Sunday, so the Florida, the Greenfield bus wasn't running. And there was no one else around, just George standing there in the cold, kind of underdressed. So I stopped and asked him what he was up to.
A lot of times, like you'll see someone standing here in the middle of the night or early in the morning, and you're like, how did they come to be there right now?
Right now?
Like right now.
They called it death by ambulance yesterday. Last night. And they didn't keep me. Of course, I didn't take a jacket or anything.
Where did you get picked up?
At my apartment.
At your house, up in Hatfield.
Yeah.
And so then you went to the hospital, and then you got released.
Yeah.
Did you just walk out? Did someone pick you up? Or how did you come down here?
No. I waited around for 4 hours, and then I started walking. No, they said, get out. So I said, okay. So I left.
Feeling okay?
No, my back is killing me. My legs are killing me. I'm cold, I'm freezing.
Yeah, because it's like 6 in the morning and it's January. But do you have money for a cab now?
No. I got some charges to let me do it. I'm pretty sure they'll let me do it. Because I know them pretty well.
You've done it before.
But yeah, it's just as it is, I have to stay in prison now. I said, the hell with you.
Because I'll go see if I can find one. Because I don't have a phone. You know,
I don't have one. Everything's at the house. Now what do I do?
That was just a brief clip with George in the park on Sunday, but I trust that he got home okay because I didn't see him there on Monday. I'll ask him when I see him in town again. There's lots of other shows on Valley Free Radio. Here's one you might like to listen to.
Valley Tango has a new time. That's Wednesday mornings at 11 to 1 in the afternoon. Tango music is beautiful, mysterious, and soulful. It has captivated the imagination of people all over the world as the music of romance. Bring a little romance into your life every Wednesday morning with Valley Tango Connect. Join me every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. for Valley Tango Connect, only on Valley Free Radio. 103.3 FM, WXOJ-LP.
I'm going to play a few more minutes of Puerto Rican Cuatro music and then continue with the interview with Miriam Fuentes.
Whites, we don't feel that way,
Yeah, well, Puerto Rico has such a variety of different skin colors. And
right. We can be from black, I mean deep black, yeah. from very, very fair skin, blue-eyed. Yeah. We can have a lot in the middle of that, all kinds of shades.
Yeah.
And Puerto Rico, I think, it's a showcase of a real melting pot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You talked about Operation Bootstrap. Could you explain it briefly?
Well, this is a program that was put in place during the 50s. There was a big political reform. Puerto Ricans were allowed to elect their governor and to have two legislatures and to have their own. They had a Supreme Court, but before that, the chief of the Supreme Court and the judges themselves were nominated or were named by the president. Mm-hmm. Well, there was reform when Puerto Ricans were able to draw their own constitution, local constitution. Mm-hmm. And along with that came a lot of economic reforms. And one of them is the so-called model or program of Bootstrap, Operation Bootstrap, which is mainly what it really basically meant is that Puerto Rico had a special situation within the American or the U.S. fiscal regime. We had an exceptional situation wherein we don't pay federal taxes. And that was made so that foreign capital would come to the island. Because remember, at that point, our wages were much more lower than the wages here in the States. And there were a lot of subsidies that were offered to industrial capital. So a lot of those industries settled in Puerto Rico. And this lasted for two, maybe close to three decades, this model worked. But it got exhausted. And the exhaustion of the model and the non-replacement of the model with anything else is the main cause of the big immigration that we have witnessed in the last decades in Puerto Rico.
Like to New especially, York.
Especially during this decade. Well, it's very complicated because we can talk about this for hours. Mm-hmm. One of the big waves of immigration in Puerto Rico, surprisingly, during Operation Bootstrap, because Operation Bootstrap was a program to industrialize the island, uh-huh. but the industry wasn't able to absorb all the labor on the island that was left with no opportunities. You know, this was mainly people who would be working the farms in the island and the sugar plantations. There were haciendas, really. Plantation is not a good word. It's because it's a little different regime, but it's the regime of the centrales, of the big sugar cane factories. But with the demise of the sugar in Puerto Rico and the opening of a different kind of industry, most of that labor wasn't able to be absorbed by the industry. Mm-hmm. So we had a program on the island to move those people to the States, where to the farms, where they could be employed in the farms here. This is why you have such a big emigration, not only to New York, but also to Springfield, for instance, because there were people who came here to work the farms. And the difference between other migrant workers here is that Puerto Ricans were American citizens and they were able to stay and establish their families here, bring their families with them, and send their children to the schools here, and they became part of the mm-hmm. community. Different from other migrant workers mm-hmm. that were brought from Mexico and other Latin American mm-hmm. countries.
That was Puerto Rican filmmaker and author and Northampton resident Miriam Fuentes. Thanks, Miriam, for taking the time to share your wealth of information and knowledge with me and with the listeners of out there here on Valley Free Radio. Next, I have a little clip of just myself speaking. I love winter nights on the rail trail and riding my bike. And last night was one of those nights.
It's nighttime on the rail trail in the winter. Snow and ice on the roads and the paths, but the path was plowed, so it's just got a small coating of snow on it over some thin ice. The sun's on the other side of the planet, but the moon is out. There's one place I know of on the rail trail where I can stop and look at the night sky, and as long as I look straight ahead, there's no artificial lights in my eyes. I'm at that spot right now. And the way the ground is all covered with snow, it's the moon is casting the shadows of the branches onto the snow. I like to ride without any lights when it's so bright outside. Sometimes I'll be riding along, and then I'll come into like downtown Florence. There's one particularly bright light in the Florence Savings Bank parking lot, and then coming into it, it's so bright, especially on top of the snow, that my pupils shrink with such force it hurts my head. The spot where I'm at now, there's no lights shining in my eyes, but you can see the steam from the Coulee Dick from the hospital physical plant floating up into the sky with this pinkish orange glow. It looks a little sicko. Sometimes I think I'm just gonna go somewhere where the lights won't shine in my eyes, but I can just see the sky and the trees and the woods. I'll go to Kentucky. But wait, there's fracking and oil drilling and mountaintop removal there. I'll just live in a silo, and then I'll have a removable roof so I can look straight up and there won't be any lights coming in from the sides to bother me. I'll just look straight up at the sky in my little shielded silo. But I probably wouldn't have any friends if I lived in a silo built for one. But what's a human animal to do living in this world where the human animals keep expanding and taking over the land of the other animals, bulldozing the homes of the other animals? Sometimes I don't know how to make sense of it without either falling apart or just numbing. You have to numb yourself. I feel like I have to numb myself every night when I go somewhere. I have to numb myself to the glare and the separation from the natural world. For me, the middle ground between numbing myself to the destruction of the environment and melting into a puddle of sorrow from it is fight, fight, fight. There's a part of me that's a warrior that will not give in to the brainwashing and the thinking that I need all this stuff. I will not give in to valuing money over people. I will not give in to valuing status over kindness. And most of all, I won't give in to hopelessness. But I love the rail trail because it allows me a certain kind of a semblance of connection with the natural world and the universe. And on a practical level, I really like it on cold winter nights, icy winter nights, because I can just ride with no lights, enjoy the moon, and I feel like I can ride safely at night because there aren't fast-moving tons of metal boxes careening towards me and trying to get around me, especially when the tracks and the road are narrowed and there's ice on both sides. On the bike path, it's just me and the ice. And we get along pretty well.
This is Out There. Thanks for listening today. That's about it for the show. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Up at 5 o'clock. This is Marc Anthony Preciosa. I don't even know this is up.
Yo sé. Que mi bonita hermosa. por ser un Edén. Y tienes la noble galía de la madre España y el fiero cantío del indio bravío lo tienes también. Preciosa te llaman los pardos que cantan tu historia. No importa el tirano, te tirate con negra maldad. Preciosa será sin banderas, sin lauros, ni gloria. Oh, preciosa, preciosa, te llaman los hijos.